Hello and welcome to Darnley Cyber Cafe. I'm your host, Darnley Gresson Jr. Episode 56. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to be doing a different format in this particular podcast, just because of a interesting, I don't want to say a development, but a common comment or comments that I've been receiving with my latest podcast in episode 55, where I spoke about artificial intelligence. There was a little comment I made about geopolitics. And I'm not saying it angered anyone. It just really brought up some unique discussions about how cybersecurity and geopolitics kind of play in with the whole scheme of things. And unless you've been asleep in the last year or so with the war in Ukraine and the impeding war in Taiwan, you know, if you didn't know about any of this, you must be living under a rock. And a lot of the incidences that came before and after and during, you know, has really set the stage for how certain security events will unfold. Now, for example, we do know about the issues of, you know, the Russian cyber attacks and Chinese cyber attacks to basically any of the NATO countries. And this isn't news media at all, like breaking news. This has been going on for many years, you know, 10 plus years. This has been going on. And, you know, I don't want to turn this into an us versus them. I want to turn this into a podcast of understanding. I come from a capitalistic society that has democracy. I know some of you will say, well, Darnley, Canada, you know, the way it's going so far, you know, neighbors to the United States, not getting into that. That's just a whole different landscape of nonsensical stuff that I don't really want to get into in this particular podcast. I want to focus more on how the geopolitical landscape affects the outcome in cyberspace and our lives, essentially, because like I said in my past podcast in episode 55, of how significant AI will be changing our world, but also how significant computers have changed our world today and now. And with everything going on, our enemies are looking at ways to use in cyberspace to create some sort of damage. Now, you need to understand the war, as I've been talking about, that has been going on for many years now underneath our fingertips in cyberspace, have been going on for a long time. You know, I've made this very clear in my various podcasts, and this just has not happened in the last year. This has been going on for a long time. You know, for example, one of the tech giants here in Canada, Nortel, it was a massive organization, but due to corporate greed and not having the awareness of particular Chinese interests, that type of technology was stolen. Now, this isn't hearsay. This has been proven. There's enough evidence now for a leg to stand on about, well, the fact of the matter is that the communist Chinese government has stole, you know, the specific technologies and used it for their own benefit in different companies that the CCP has enabled. Now, I'm going to be talking bad about governments here. I'm not talking about people. I have known personally and professionally various Chinese individuals who are been great people, and from what I can tell, are not part of any CCP nonsense. And in the news about the whole police stations, that the localized police stations that the CCP uses, you know, it really kind of blurs it a bit in the sort of geopolitical landscape over the surveillance, and the Chinese government itself has used technological means, psychological means to control the people within the country and to control the narrative outside the country. Now, if you have not heard of the Great Wall of China, not the physical wall, the Great Firewall of China, I mean, then you need to understand that a lot of things that go on within the country is withheld from the rest of the world, because in essence, all the democracies live in a glass house. But the problem is a lot of these countries, such as North Korea, China, and Russia, they do release certain information that works in their best interest, and all the negative stuff they try to keep behind closed doors. And if that negative information somehow gets out, they attack and use their influence to try to dissuade those individuals or groups to release that information. So there's a lot of psychological attacks on top of technological attacks that they use to control the flow of information to and from their country. So there's a lot of stuff that you see in the news and you hear on the internet and on the media about certain countries. It could be, you know, your own country or one of those aforementioned countries I mentioned before. But you need to understand that this is a very multifaceted operation. But more back into the geopolitics is that, you know, with the attack against Ukraine, you know, that sent people in different sides. That kind of reaffirmed people's or countries' positions about either, you know, freedom or about, you know, having the right to own a sovereign nation and not get attacked, which is what I assumed the United Nations was supposed to do. But looks like it's done some great jobs in some aspects, but has failed because the major players are sitting on the Security Council, which pretty much have the last say. And if one of them doesn't like what each other's doing, they just veto it, which I think is a little absurd. And at the time, I can understand why they did it. But as time went on, basically all the countries, I'm not speaking specifically on, you know, Russia, China, North Korea, but all the countries have used that to their advantage and just continue to create that divide of the so-called unity that the United Nations was supposed to be. But aside from that, when it comes to having various attacks, now you want to look at, you know, how geopolitics plays a role in cybersecurity. And it does this in several ways. Well, first, countries engage in cyber espionage and cyber attacks on each other for economic and political gain. Now, these attacks can range from stealing intellectual property, like Nortel, or to disrupting critical infrastructure. You know, the geopolitical tensions between these nations can increase with the likelihood of these attacks, as basically these countries try to get an advantage over the other. On top of that, you know, something that's a bit near and dear to my heart is cybersecurity also plays a crucial role in context of national security. You know, various countries are concerned about protecting their critical infrastructure, such as their energy, telecommunications, transportation, from these cyber threats. And the vulnerability of these systems can have a significant geopolitical implications, as these disruptions can impact the economy and the ability to defend the nation. Like I mentioned, again, my last podcast in episode 55. You know, I just don't think a lot of people just sit there and assume this is sort of a black and white perspective. And you need to understand that cyber attacks go hand in hand with geopolitical, you know, forthcomings. But where is that line that one can cross in terms of how much damage can one country inflict to the other before an appropriate response? So we're not dropping missiles. We're not, you know, putting in soldiers or munitions and tanks in the enemy country. We are doing it on the World Wide Web where everyone has access to. Now, again, China and North Korea both have their own internal networks, so to speak, so they can control what their people see and what outsiders can see, or what foreigners can see. So China and North Korea have a very authoritarian, totalitarian digital landscape set up, because obviously with any sort of dictatorships or communist dictatorships, you know, that a power has been abused by the elite few to control what the people think and feel. Now you're going to say, well, yes, darling, that happens in the Western countries as well. Well, yes, there's a lot of misinformation, disinformation, and propaganda, even from Western countries. You know, propaganda exists all across the board, not just in those bad places. You know, the Chinese and North Koreans take it to the next level and the worst level, mind you. But to say that the Western countries do it better is a lie. We just have more freedom of access to information where we can make a really good informed decision over the information. Now, if you really want to find the truth, if you really want to find the various information that's out there, there is a bit of work on your part. And the problem is with mainstream media, it gets more or less controlled to a degree where a particular country's narrative gets put front and center. And if you're lazy and you just listen to whatever comes out of your TV or your internet feeds, you're going to get a very polarizing perspective of that, right? And to my last point about geopolitics and cybersecurity, the third one is cybersecurity is a global issue, and it requires international cooperation. Countries must work together and to help develop normalities and regulations for cyberspace to promote security and stability. Now, these geopolitical tensions can really make it difficult to achieve this cooperation, as some countries may be reluctant to share information or to coordinate these efforts with other adversaries or with other cooperating nations. So, you know, this whole geopolitics and cybersecurity is very intertwined, and it's been used in very complex ways. And, you know, when it comes to policymakers, you know, they must consider everything. They must consider not just, you know, the flavor of the month, but must consider, you know, the consequences of making decisions related to international relations and security, because, you know, we've been already warned about the failures of if we cannot work well together. There's a bunch of saber rattling that goes on, and people say, and countries say, well, you know, if you don't do this, we're going to blow you up. And we have bigger weapons. We have bigger army. We have this and that. And a lot of like schoolyard antics start becoming real. And those schoolyard antics in the geopolitical landscape does have ramifications in cyberspace, because that is fueled by a lot of the propaganda from all sides. And there is a growing resentment and hate to the point where it boils over. And then we have war, and then more people start dying. So all this does not lead to good roads here, people. It leads just to more death and destruction. But the dangers and issues with today versus back in the 1940s is that in the 1940s, everything was very air-gapped in some ways, and technology was just taking off. So we did not have some of the issues that we have today in the 21st century over computers controlling our militaries or our telecommunications or our gas distribution, stuff like that. So it just really burns out of control if you take a step back and realize the huge impacts that this can have towards any nation, right? And I'm not even talking about shooting off nuclear bombs at each other and stuff like that. Like, that's not even the beginning of it. But what it is the fact that we do not understand these complex ways. And unfortunately, that most of these countries that have the most nukes, like China, United States, India, and Russia, to name a few, and obviously UK, France, and all them, is that at one point we'll be pointing all these nuclear weapons at each other. And then if, let's say, just for sake of argument, and I like stirring the pot here, if one country implements Skynet to make it more of a fail-safe, just like if you ever watched Terminator, Skynet was the AI system that basically got control over nuclear weapons and various military technology and use it against human beings. And then the whole thing of the cybernetic Borgs organisms and whatever kind of ensued from the breathing of the intellectual consciousness of AI that basically stirred up the conflict and almost ended humanity, which is where the Terminator story came from. But I digress. Like it's not just about that, but it's also about the understanding of where we're going and your mindset to all this, because it's not an easy concept here. It's not something that you can say, yes, I understand, or I can say, yes, I understand. You know, I've been involved in national security and I can tell you, I don't fully understand it either. And when I was involved and when I was out, things have changed significantly. Technology has changed significantly. The way we do business has changed significantly. So that's always a slippery slope. That's always a point of contention. But when it comes to making decisions for our future, you know, there's a lot at play here, especially when you bring in geopolitics. And unfortunately, if you're not a politician, you're not involved in politics, it's a really big apple to bite and to swallow, because it's not really something that we can fix overnight. You know, we've used this mindset for generations, and unfortunately, we always seem to get the same outcome once things don't go our way, or, you know, once someone threatens someone else. It's just like a Franz Ferdinand event at this point. You know, I see it from a personal perspective. I see it going, I don't want to say nuclear, but I see it going where cyber attacks will start increasing first. Before you start seeing tanks on the ground and boots on the ground, you're going to start seeing the cyber landscape light up even more. And let me make this very clear. The weapons that have not been released yet are still waiting to be released. So that is something that we all must watch out for, because there are bigger and better cyber weapons out there that are being ready to be deployed at a certain time and place. But we don't know when that's going to happen. Right? It's like I always say about cyber criminals. It's they always have two steps ahead of individuals like myself, people in the cybersecurity landscape. They're always two steps ahead of us. But these types of weapons that are probably in existence right now and are being waited to be deployed are not exactly the most endearing things, because like I said in my previous podcast, you don't know when the lights are going to go out. It may not even be an EMP. Right? We have seen this happen countless times locally and abroad, where someone tries to take over transmission lines, electrical transmission lines, gas lines. We see it in the United States happen where a certain part of the US where the gas was very limited or it was shut off and people panicked. But this can grow in scale. This can just be more than just a isolated or national incident. This can literally be a global issue. And it's not to say that we need to start singing kumbaya around a campfire. It has everything to do with just being aware of our own actions, our own country's actions. Now, to play devil's advocate here, there is a need for us to create these weapons. There's a need for us to create our military, because it's more of a deterrent. And more people think that, you know, the more nuclear bombs people make, that you know, they're going to wipe everyone off the map. Let me make this clear. Either country, no matter who you're talking about, are not idiots. They understand if they open up the floodgates and let all their nuclear arsenal goes out, you know, China, India, US, UK, France, Russia, North Korea, doesn't matter, any of them. If any one of these countries who have nuclear weapons decided to say, you know what, screw this, I'm setting off all my nuclear weapons, I don't care what happens. Like the people who are sitting there at those command control centers understand very well that these things can bring irreversible effects on our planet. And it's just only a handful of these being lobbed at each other through either a nuclear exchange that could change the weather in our planet as we know it and change all of our lives forever. Not necessarily to say that we're going to be all, you know, vaporized in a nuclear holocaust. No, is that these weapons can cause environmental damage, right? So what I'm just trying to say here is that everything is a tiered step process. It's going to, you're going to start seeing these attacks going through the cyber world, which we are now. It's not, you know, a breaking news here. The cyber attacks have increased, and it's only a matter of time before someone gets to where they shouldn't be and rains hell on that particular country, no matter if that's the US or China or Russia or Ukraine. Those are going to be the countries that are going to be suffering the most, you know, and you don't have to launch a missile. It's much cheaper to do that than to launch a missile or to launch anti-ballistic. So you're going to see all these countries starting to use cyberspace as their ground zero. And as those attacks get more sophisticated and bigger and more intense, then you may see it kind of creep out into the real world where you're starting to see this go out to the actual countries or to the militaries. So mark my words, we will be seeing this very soon. And this is going to have some really interesting effects on our society. And it really depends on the posture of these countries, but also their ability to induce restraint, even though they may have, you know, a few thousand missiles at their nuclear missiles at their fingertips. Doesn't necessarily mean they need to shoot them off and kill us all or kill us all. But nuclear arms are initially meant for deterrence, so that countries won't invade them or attack them, because they know if you release a nuclear hellfire that, you know, people will suffer on every part of the globe. It's not just going to be an isolated incident. You're not just dropping dummy bombs in a country anymore. You're dropping weapons that can change the environment basically overnight. So that's why we got to be careful, and that's why, like I said, geopolitics and cybersecurity go hand in hand. They're intertwined in complex ways. But we must keep, especially in a democratic country, wherever you are, we must make sure that our policymakers, the heads of state, are people who are able to have restraint, but also make those decisions to protect us in the cyber landscape, but also at the same time to protect us in the real world. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Darwin Cyber Cafe. Hope to see you again next time, everyone. Take care. Bye now.